Welcome to Have You Heard, where we talk about issues at the intersection of agriculture and engineering. Let's get started. Here are your hosts, Morgan Hayes and Josh Jackson.
Welcome. This is the Have You Heard podcast. This is episode 65. We're going to speak a little bit today about bush hogging and broom sage. I'm Morgan Hayes, an assistant professor in biosystems and ag engineering here at the University of Kentucky, focusing on livestock facilities. And in my personal life, I farm in Boyle County, Kentucky with my husband. It's a commercial cattle and hay operation.
And I'm Josh Jackson, assistant professor in biosystem agriculture engineering as well, where I focus on precision livestock farming in my home life, raise registered Angus cattle. I'll also focus on some hay production and raise some goats as well.
Okay. So before we get into our topic for today, let's do a little bit of a recap. We've actually recorded this episode before, and then we've had a couple illnesses, and the previous recording did not go well. So we're going to re-record today on a topic that I don't actually remember the first time we recorded it because it was a couple weeks ago. But I think we probably have to recap a couple weeks of farm-related tasks.
Couple weeks. So in that time, we've cut some hay, we got a tractor back, and then we sent it back off again to get the clutch repaired. And then we've also been calving. So we've had the bulk of our calves are already on the ground. And so right now we're kind of getting down to the winding down our season. So we had a really good surge there. And so now we're kind of getting into the last, not the last, but we're still getting a couple more that are just more of a, not stragglers, but definitely dwindling down as far as number of calves being that we still have remaining. And then, you know, additionally, we'll talk about, you know, some bush hogging and then the bringing up the broom sage issue as well.
Yeah, I think that's it's a good time of year to talk about a bunch of these things. So we similarly are in our fall calving. My count last night had us at 29 out of 38 calves on the ground. Hopefully out of 38 calves on the ground, we're assuming 38 are going to calve. And so that's a pretty good number for us because we are... We're a month in, not even a full month in, I guess. We're more than 3 weeks in, though. So we're probably about 24 days into the... So we've been through one full cycle on the cows. You guys use AI, but we are using bull power. So that's pretty good numbers
for us. Pretty good numbers.
Yeah, I think we were comfortably at about 60, between 65 and 70%. We were definitely over two-thirds in the first cycle.
Pretty good.
Yeah, that's a pretty good number for us. Last year we were at 80, which is an unbelievable number. and I think we'll be above 80% when we hit 1 month out of a 60-day window. When we hit 30 days, we'll be at that number, which is still a very solid performance for us on our calving cycle. Where we would prefer to be is, you know, at 100, but we will absolutely take that kind of number with our bull power that we have in front of us. Because it's without doing cycle training and things like that, that we're doing pretty well, actually.
Okay. And what was your bull power? About 1 to 20, 1 to 30?
We have about 1 to 30 usually, although this group we've moved a few in. We actually had a really tough breeding cycle last fall. We had one bull that didn't work. So we only had 4 out of 20 some head. And we tested him prior to the season, but he had some foot rot during the season, and it significantly impacted him. He did not breed, basically.
Wow.
And we made the decision, the four that got bred, most of them have now calved because they bred early in the season, are now in this group. And the remainder of that 20-some, we rebred on our spring cycle. So we rolled them to spring.
Okay.
That was the right decision with the cow prices where they're at, I'm not sure. But cow prices weren't that high when we made the decision to rebreed them on the spring cycle. And it balances out our numbers a little bit more. We tend to hold better calving rates, better breeding rates in the fall.
Yep.
So we don't tend to have as hard a cull in the fall. Our spring culls, really, they're breeding in June and July. It's very hot. We tend to have lower conception rates there. So we tend to have harder culling on our spring herd, so being able to roll some animals from fall to spring is not the end of the world for us.
Right.
But...
oh, with prices the way they are now, it's like, well, do we...
At this point, if anything shows up open, they're leaving for the next, you know, cycle or two. So they were very lucky that that happened just enough before the peak in pricing that I was not the cutthroat person that I am today.
Okay. Because today it'd be a completely different story.
Yes. If I was in charge, it would be a very different story. So anyway, so that's what's happening. Calving is going well. We're finishing up with bush hogging. And we have one field on third cut left to cut. That's all that we have left on our farms from a hay perspective. So, and it's pretty dry.
Yes, it is fairly dry. We have one field as well, and we're going to cut it just because we don't want it to burn up.
That's exactly what our thought was. We were originally going to cut it this week, but there's been a couple chances of rain. Sunday, there's another good chance for rain, and we're really hoping it comes.
Hoping it comes, yes.
Yeah, if it would come, that would be great. And then we'll cut Monday, hopefully to bale on Thursday. So we've got one cutting upcoming. But other than that, we are done with hay. We have most of our hay in. We'd still like to buy a little more hay. But we did a major push earlier, probably actually since our last podcast, to bring hay in. So we now have, of 5 hoop barns, we have basically 4 of them as filled as they're going to get.
Okay.
We have about 100, 140 bales that could still go into barns if we could purchase the right hay to fit in those barns.
Right hay, right price.
Right hay, right price. and then we have our hay out at our rented farm under tarp.
Right.
We have 3 tarps of hay. So that's a pretty good chunk of our hay supply is in. It doesn't mean we didn't pay for it. It was not cheap this year to buy hay. So finding that balance.
At the rental farm, just out of curiosity, you're going to try to spread it out. You pretty much, I guess, graze as much as possible this fall. Then I guess you're going to try some of the bale grazing.
We will do a combination of unrolling, bale grazing, and putting out hay, just depending on what's happening.
Just depends on weather. Okay.
Weather dependent. We have one field that we consider our winter field, but we unroll in it with the tractor. We have a secondary field where we will bale graze.
Okay.
So that field will usually, we will set somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 to 50 rolls in there at a time. We'll do it at least 3 to 4 times over the winter. And then when it gets wet, we will release 3 at a time or 4 at a time or 5 at a time, depending on how many days we want them to have access to those bales. But we have almost 40 head there, so we can pretty comfortably put out 3 at a time and allow enough space around the rolls for everyone to eat.
All right. And then make sure they clean well.
And then they can clean that up in a day or two. It doesn't take them very long to finish bales when there's 40 head. So it's a little bit of a balancing act. This year we have all 4x5s. In the past we've used 5x5s there because 2 5x5s, they're a little bit looser 5x5s that we purchase.
Okay.
2 of those would typically be one day's feed for 40 head.
Okay, so 4x5s, yeah, that makes sense.
So we probably need about 3 for... Anyway, it's a little bit of a learning curve because everyone's hay has a little different weight to it. That could be a whole discussion for another day, is weighing hay in bales versus just buying by the dimension of the bale, which is not common around here, although very common out in Western states. So we'll get to that another time. But right now, bush hogging, broom siege.
Yep. And so, you know, this time of year, we're doing some bush hogging. And so we're trying to take care of whatever pastures that we have. And then we're doing the ones, you know, trying to avoid the ones with calves in them. So they got top priority prior to calving, at least 3 weeks before calving, they get top priority. And if you don't get it by that point, we're not going out there. And I've heard, you know, a couple horror stories of, you know, we've had incidents ourselves where, you know, a calf is in the field and you don't know about it. You know, she shouldn't have calved yet. She shouldn't. And then they're in the brush. And so that can be an issue. You realize pretty quickly why they say no riders on the bush hog, you know, focus on safety.
Yeah.
Or no riders on the tractor when you're bush hogging, especially because, you know, it does some damage.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, it's absolutely true. The bush hog is a tricky thing. We are bush hogging right now in our like our heifer fields. Yep. We've already bush hogged any fields that our cows that are calving are going into. So we actually clipped our ones that had more weeds in them before we actually started them into their some of their calving fields. They're in the one field that wasn't yet clipped for another day or two, and then they will move into a clipped field again.
Okay.
The field that they're in, though, didn't have a lot of weed pressure other than some brood. So it needs clipped, and it will get when they leave, but we won't do it until we get a good count of everything leaving that field. Moving young calves is so difficult. For anyone who is listening and has never moved newborn calves, it is painfully difficult. And so, in fact, to move them from the field that they were in before this to the one that they're currently in, it took us 2 full days. And we check twice a day religiously when we're in calving season, morning and night. And if we see something that's having difficulty, we will be back at least one more time that day to check. Or even if they're not having difficulty, but we see feed out, we will go back and make sure that they're, or at least a water bag out, we will go back and check them in an hour just to see what's happening and if progressing normally or not.
Progressing as it should.
So we ended up, the first time we knew that there were calves left behind when the cows went at the first move cycle, we left it alone in hopes that the cows would come collect their calves and bring them through. That night, it looked like that was the case, other than 2 cows were still on the other side with their calves. So we left it alone again. The third time we came back, all the cows were where they supposed to be, and we were missing 2 calves. Just 2. But 2 calves is still a problem, because when you have 2 calves missing, you can't close gates.
Nope.
And the worst part is that they were probably where they were supposed to be, but we couldn't find them. And as you know, that means that you can't close. So we had to wait for a third, you know, another cycle after the initial move. And then finally, we got a good count on calves.
Okay.
And then we were able to close down the transfer between the fields. Nobody wants to wait that long. That's yeah. painful to have that. If you were a person that just had a completely open pasture and you didn't do rotation, this would not stress you out at all, because you don't move your calves. But for someone who tries to move calves on a weekly or at least on a 10-day cycle,
it's excruciating.
2 days of having them with access to 2 different fields and having to check both fields. Because essentially you're doing 2 things. You're checking for new calves, and the cows go off to calve wherever there's no one else around. So they will go back. And then you're like, now you've gone back and put another calf into this field that I'm trying to get you out of. Just makes you angry. You start to get very angry about it. So it's just life as it is with small calves. So at this point, we're hoping to only have to do 1 or 2 more moves. If we get to that point, we will start putting out hay rather than moving them into some of our larger fields that are further walks to the water tank. 1, so that the calves don't have to walk so far, and 2, so we don't have to drive and look in so many places for those calves that where they can hide.
Yep, because searching God's creation is kind of frustrating sometimes.
Yes, and this farm does have a lot of God's earth on it. It's got some areas that I have never been able to get to, literally on foot or on a 4-wheeler.
So, yeah, there's no need to get a 4-wheeler stuck.
There's no need to get a 4-wheeler stuck. There's no need to go out on foot and cut up myself. There's no need for any of that. If we need to, we'll feed a little bit of hay. It is dry enough right now. We won't feel too bad if we unroll a couple rolls to get us over that hump. If we get down to the last 2 or 3 calves and everything else is 2 weeks old, we would move them out into a big field, because we can manually check for a few animals. But until we get to under 5 left and everything else old enough that we feel comfortable that they're mobile and healthy, probably won't move further pasture.
And we've been feeding hay for probably about feeding hay solidly for at least 2 weeks now.
Yeah, to your calving group.
To our calving group, because we want to just keep them up there, keep them close by, and just so we can keep a better eye on them. We know that where the cow should be. If they're not there, they're off somewhere calving, or maybe they've had a calf, and so we can know who to look for potentially. Yeah. So we've been keeping ours. You know, it's frustrating, but I know it's also dry, so we're kind of keeping them in this location. Like maybe we'll get some rain, then we can hopefully get you moved to some greener pastures. Till then, keep me off the greener pastures. I don't want them to be stressed.
I think that's a good plan. How are your greener pastures? Because I will say this. We have some areas that got a little bit of rain last week, and they greened up, and other areas that rain did not do anything. One of the things I will say that we have is, and it was starting to yellow, and actually now it's come back a little bit greener, is actually the broom station field. Because it actually is one that is fairly tolerant of drought conditions. It's going to yellow anyway, because that's what it does, but it's been growing remarkably well considering how poorly other things are growing in my fields.
So the one, you know, the couple pastures that I have that are green that I've kept them off of are ones that I've been fertilizing. Those have been, they look fairly lush and thick. And so I'm just keeping off of there because I want that one to thrive. And if I need to, I can put them in there later on after we do get some rains, maybe later in the season, it'll still be fairly productive. With the broom sage, we do have some fields adjacent and even in some hay fields where we do have some broom sage coming up. And so where there is broom sage, broom sage is a weed. It is a weed. It's a C4 weed. And it's, you know, predominant here in the Southeast. And it's usually indicator of some deficiencies.
A lot of times a nutrient, sometimes a pH issue, a little bit of both.
A little bit of both. So it can be a pH issue with low phosphorus, it can be a pH issue with low potassium. So it kind of can be an indicator of either one.
Yeah, it's certainly an indication you should probably do a soil test.
Indication of soil test. Or, you know, I think the frustrating part, a lot of our issue has kind of been just over this past 2 years where, you know, they just didn't want us to buy fertilizer. They decided, you know, they didn't want me to buy fertilizer. They just increased that price and said, no, we don't want you to buy. Just
hold off for a little bit longer. Yeah, no, I think this is a year that you're going to see a couple things happening. People have been more hesitant fertilizer for hay fields, for pastures in general, for both. And in addition to that, it's sort of that time of year where we would already see it.
Yep.
And with this drought, I think it's not even a true drought. I don't even want to say that we're in a true drought because there are a lot of areas of the U.S. that are really in drought. But it is dry. It's questionable in different areas how much rain they've gotten because rain has been sporadic.
Yep.
For instance, I live on one side of my county. My parents live on the other side of the county. They've gotten at least two or three rainstorms on their side of the county that we haven't received. And it's just the nature of sort of having some hillier terrain and how the fronts sort of come through the area. And I'm sure you get this too because the Kentucky River comes down through here and you can see it rain where you live on the Harrodsburg side of the river. And then you could be in Wilmore on the other side of the river for people that are local here. That, I mean, these people might only be 5 miles apart as the crow flies, but they will have completely varied weather patterns between regions. It's really wild to watch how storms track.
It can be interesting. Yeah. So we've always said we had a magic mountain in our area because it was just the storms would come, hit this mountain, magic mountain, invisible mountain, and then go around us. so we always just, you know, jokingly called it that. But, you know, it can be very variable, especially this time of year when it's more of these pop-up showers that we're getting.
Yep.
And so, you know, this, you know, the broom sage that's out there, you know, we see it, it's an issue, but there's no spray specifically to target broom sage. And if you did, you know, do a broad spectrum chemical spray, the only thing that's going to come back is the broom sage.
Yeah, the broom sage is particularly resilient, not particularly good with herbicides. The bush hogging is pretty much our best effort with it, which doesn't really stop it necessarily, but it does. It does allow something else to come back potentially if we start to get some rains and we start to get into that, you know, the dual peaks that we see with our cool season grasses, our fescues, even our clovers a little bit. We'll see that fall peak and it's going to start to happen here in the next week or two.
Yep.
If we start to get a little bit of rain or we get maybe a hurricane bringing some moisture up here, don't wish for hurricanes. There are people that would really prefer not to have them, but in general, here in Kentucky, that is a very common expectation for fall rain is we get rain from the Gulf that comes in with hurricanes and tropical storms. So
even back in the day, Hurricane Rita and Katrina, they might have, you know, devastated Louisiana and Texas, but they were good for Kentucky to get rain in the later season.
Yeah, later in the fall. It is something we actually do depend on. It's a very weird dynamic because you don't really hope for major hurricanes, but you would really like some of the Gulf moisture to work its way this far north, and that's one of the ways we get it. So I wouldn't be surprised that we do see some because there's been quite a bit of activity.
Yeah, and plus with the El Nino being keeping maybe the Gulf a little warmer, maybe we're hoping to get some moisture heading this way.
Although maybe we need to have Dixon on because everything I hear says it's going to be a bad winter, and I don't want to start bringing in too much moisture too early because I might be regretting it in January if we keep getting moisture through the late fall. So in the meantime, I guess for us, our management for this broom stage is, one, we're doing soil tests in the next couple weeks. We have a bunch of soil tests to do. And this was pretty indicative this year. We found a couple spots, even though we did pretty broad fertilizer application in the spring after none last year, there are a couple spots that are really obvious that they are going to need more work. As well, we will be doing some more bush hogging.
And, you know, for us, you know, I've been involved with some work with Jimmy Henning, and so we were on a farm where they did traditional triple 19 fertilization. And then came in, they were having issues with a lot of brome sage. And then it turns out what the problem was that the uptake for your potassium is going to be much higher, like almost two to three times higher than it is for your phosphorus. Mm-hmm. And so they were applying their nutrients uniformly.
Yeah.
The uptake by the plants was very different. And so it was taking up a lot more potash than phosphorus. And so that can be one of the issues that can be faced as well. And we've conducted some drone flights and we're able to identify areas where there is maybe some higher concentrations of brome sage and some lower concentrations. But, you know, the takeaway we got from it was pretty much what's most important is, you know, taking a good soil, getting a good soil sample, and then applying nutrients as economically feasible as possible, you know, applying what's economically feasible for an operation. And that'll actually resolve some of the brome sage issue. Your other grass will actually outcompete it.
Ideal. That's ideal. And we have a bunch of manure right now on our farms that we are going to spread. One thing I will say is interesting is, and that's anecdotal, but I have never had a lot of issues with sage in spots where I apply fertilizer from manure.
Okay.
Which might mean that I'm doing my soil tests and then readjusting with commercial fertilizer regularly enough that I'm not getting out of whack, because we actually don't, but we actually don't do tests. So we don't know what's in our manure. I mean, I generally know what's in my manure because I know what
goes in,
what NRCS tells me a typical beef cow's manure has in terms of. Okay.
Yes.
So I have a rough idea of what I'm applying when I do that, but I don't have a test on my stockpiled manure. So that is one of our goals in the next couple of weeks, especially since it's dry right now and we think we're going to get a little bit more rain, hopefully later this fall. We'll get that manure spread. It's a good time of year to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully that will help. That in combination with the soil test, then we'll be able to come in and do some commercial fertilizer application if we spring to get everything better for next spring, summer, next growing season.
Next growing season. Yeah, and it's good. You know, this time of year, getting that soil test done is also a good time to also apply that lime. So if there was an issue with the brome sage or whatever it may be, it's also, you know, it's a lime issue. Anytime we're putting down some of the manure and actual nutrients, it's helping lower that pH.
Yep.
And so going back in there and making sure we make sure to raise it annual by annual basis is also going to be.
Yeah, and actually, I actually read an article by Dr. Ritchie here at Plant and Soil Science Department out in Princeton about applying the lime, the fertilizer. And it was very interesting because actually they saw the same sort of results when applying the pelleted lime versus, which is supposed to be a faster acting lime, versus lime from the quarries around here.
Really?
At least the way I interpreted the results, to me it seemed like the pelleted lime was not giving a lot different results. right at that 1 month mark, there was a slight difference, but by 3 and 6 months, there was essentially no difference in the activation. So if you needed it to activate immediately, you would want a pelleted line. But for the cost difference, it really justified for me doing the right things in the fall. By springtime, there'd be no benefit to the pelleted lime in terms of how it was adjusting a pH.
Right.
And so I thought that was a really interesting study. Maybe we'll have him on to talk a little bit about it. It's one of my real curiosities is how fast lime acts, and is there justification for some of the products that are out there other than just lime from a local quarry? I have a very good quarry with fairly active lime that we can spread. I know yours is a little bit poorer than mine, but for me, from a cost standpoint, I can't see a reason why I wouldn't be purchasing lime from the quarry, especially if I can get it on in the fall, although I would even put it on in the spring at this point based upon his study results.
And, you know, I think even for us, getting it from the local quarry makes a lot of sense, but I know there is certain regions across the state here, even like the northern Kentucky, there's a sometimes limited availability of the actual, you know,
ag lime.
And so it's, I think in those areas, they're kind of limited in some degree of what is available. And they're going all the way down to Georgetown, potentially. You know, it depends on where we are in the state as far as, you know, what is their availability to get some of these.
Absolutely. Well, products. And then if I was in an area like that, then maybe I would want one of those products that's less heavy, that I don't have to transport quite so far, that I can spread less. So I'm not literally spreading the tons per acre that I have to with
the ag lime.
But
and plus, I wouldn't want to be on a tractor or even have a lime buggy behind me upon some of those hills.
That is also a fair that the hills are pretty dangerous. Although some people drive those trucks like they have no fear at all. So
yep, it's maybe liquid courage on that one.
There you go. It's hard to tell. Okay, so before we finish up here, I think we've gotten ourselves off topic here. Why don't you give me a quick goal for the next week or month, depending on how long it takes us to get to another podcast here?
So the goal would be, hopefully at some point here, finish up the calving season, depending on when we come back. Finish up our calving season, I'm going to make sure to spread, so we have some manure to spread. So our hay barn, get it cleaned out, get a good deep clean prior to, you know, it's really starting to put out hay in that barn. And then potentially we need to do some reseeding here. So reseeding needs to take place with some grasses and just a field or two here. Wanting to plant some orchard grass, maybe some dirty fescue. There's a necessary evil in this state. So that would be kind of what we'd be thinking. And obviously we want to work on some fence, but whenever we get a guy out there with a dozer and a excavator to work on some clearing some lines for us.
Yeah, we have some fencing coming up, but it's probably 2 to 3 weeks out. In the meantime, we have a bush hog that is down. We have one that's running today, but the other one is down currently. So we have one that needs a couple repairs. Parts have been ordered. A kill switch on one tractor that needs to be replaced. It's just really a piece of wire that's snapped, but it's a problem.
Yep,
it's very hard to turn off a tractor when you don't have your kill switch on an older tractor.
Yep.
Newer ones just, you know, turn off with a key, but old ones still
use a
standard choking mechanism. So that's important. And other than that, we have just generally calf check. That's our biggest thing. We've had big calves this year. We'll have to do a recap of calving here in maybe 2 more weeks. We're closer to the end.
Okay.
But definitely for us, calf checks are very important. We had one yesterday that came well over 100 pounds.
Wow.
We've been consistently sitting in the 90s, a couple in the hundreds, and this one was big calf.
Hopefully it was a mature cow.
It was a mature cow. We don't have anything that's calving that's a heifer at this point. Nothing is small and calving. They're all mature animals, and they're all having sizable calves. So nothing too shocking, but...
Yep, some good growth potential there.
I hope so. We'll be able to make good judgments on these cows based upon how these calves perform. That's all for sure. So with that, I think we'll end our podcast for today, and we will be back hopefully next week with another podcast. We're going to try not to get sick or have other technical issues this time. So we will be back next week.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Have You Heard is a production of the University of Kentucky College of Agriculture, Food and Environment, along with the Department of Biosystems and Agricultural Engineering. Discover what's wildly possible at ca.uky.edu.